01-1106, Stephen E. Kraus versus City of Waukesha Police and Fire Commission. We'll hear first from Attorney John F. Fuchs, who represents Stephen Kraus.
May it please the court, gentlemen. I think the perspective that I would like to start with is that I believe the Court of Appeals really phrased the issue succinctly and right in a fashion that we can use, because I really think the issue before you is, just as they phrased it, whether or not the Chief or Fire Commission, Police and Fire Commission, can appoint on a probationary basis. Is there any authority for it, and if so, what? And I think that issue, as narrowly stated, assists us in picking out what are really relevant facts, because factually it is a simple matter of Mr. Kraus being promoted, quote, subject to successfully completing the one-year probationary period, and I think that obviates a lot of the other facts and a lot of the issues. The fact that he wasn't, for example, given a just cause hearing when he requested it, the fact that it wasn't until 20 days after your decision in Antisdale that a letter or a subject came up at a Fire and Police Commission meeting that it, quote, had to do with his supervisory skills. I think those are almost something that provides a disservice to us. It confuses the case. If Antisdale was doing so badly, if Kraus was doing so badly, why did nobody notice it until November of 98? And why did nobody mention it until after you decided Antisdale? So I submit to the court that what we are really dealing with, simply and succinctly, is there authority in this state for probationary promotions? And on that, I want to put a comment that appears in the record that is attributable to me, to the effect that I feel it might be a common practice. The fact that I suspect probationary promotions are a common practice was offered to you only because I believe this to be, as obviously the Court of Appeals and you do, a matter of statewide concern. If it's being done, and it's not being done legally, it is a matter for this court. Doesn't mean I in any way accept or acquiesce to the practice. I break my argument for you, my position for you, down to three essential elements: statutory construction, home rule authority, and policy. Is there really a need? Is there something that should compel this court to do anything other than look at the letter of the statute? And my first question along those lines on the statutory construction issue is, if 6213, 4A, and C contemplate probationary promotions, why do they not say that? The legislature used the term probation in 165-85, applicable to new hirees, and that's what this court picked up on in Kaiser. So clearly probation applies to new hirees. If it wanted, meaning the legislature, to apply probation to the idea of promotions, then the statute should have said so. It's a classic case of it doesn't say that. In fact, the statute regarding promotion gives criteria that should be followed, good of the service type language, but it does not say probation. So my first point that I would stress is that a simple reliance on the rules of statutory construction would suggest that if the legislature wanted promotions to be probationary, as it did higher processes to be probationary, it would and could have used the language, and that there's no reason for this court to in effect write it in. In fact, 6213, 4A and B give two criteria: promote to the advantage of the department and secure the best service in the departments. That's what the statute says. That is what we are respectfully asking this court to apply. And those criteria suggest right on the face of them that what they are suggesting, meaning the legislature, is that care be exercised in promotion, knowledge, the interests of the department be implemented, and perhaps avoid nepotism, things like that. It doesn't say probation. That being the case, arguments such as that offered by Waukesha are of no legal consequence or substance. For example, to argue that they've had a policy that violates the law, is a policy this court strikes down. To say that they have a tradition, again, meaningless if the law doesn't allow for it. And reliance on case law to the effect that there's authority is also misguided. For example, the Eastman versus Madison case. In that case, clearly what really happened is those officers forfeited their right to be officers by violating the residency requirement. I suggest to the court that to take liberties with the statute, which is what I submit Waukesha is doing here, is not a good idea. It violates the legislative scheme and it's somewhat chaotic. It can lead to, as the Court of Appeals picked up on, up and outs. Take a person that has a property right in their job, in their position, promote them, turn them probationary, and then can them. And circumvent the just cause standards of 6213.
So which statute isn't Waukesha interpreting properly? 6213.5 or 6213.4 or both?
6213.4. I actually think they're interpreting 6213.5 correctly because in their FPC proceedings, they indicated we're not giving Krause a just cause hearing because it's not a for cause termination. So that one I think they have right. It's
okay.
A and
is it for cause when you say to a probationary employee that they're just not doing a good job, that they're just not able to fulfill the qualifications?
No, Your Honor, it is not.
Is it discipline when you get rid of an employee, probationary employee, because they just aren't able to do the job?
No, it is not. That's why I'm saying they're applying 62.5 correctly.
Is it a charge against somebody to say that they're not doing it properly, doing the job properly?
Actually, Your Honor, I'm going to get two answers to that question. If they're not doing it properly due to misconduct, yes, it's a charge.
The only misconduct, which is hardly misconduct, is they're just not doing the job well.
That is not just cause.
That's not just cause to fire somebody?
It's not just cause to take away property interest if they have.
They don't have a property interest. Just take a plain probationary employee. I want to know, is there a rule somewhere that says you got to do your job well?
If you are an at-will employee, there is no such rule.
Not even on a probationary employee? There's no rule that says you retained if you do the job well?
In the context of this case, mm-hmm. I would actually submit to you that if the person is not doing the job well, there's a rule in a common sense or a work ethic sense, yes, do your job well, but there is not a rule that allows you to take that job away from them if they are simply not performing to your level of expectation. There just isn't such a rule because the legislature didn't allow for it. And in fact, your case law thus far interpreting these statutes has applied the just cause standard. And the reason, you asked initially, Your Honor, do they have 6213-4 wrong? I'm paraphrasing your question, obviously. That one I think they do have wrong, because that's the one where the statute doesn't say demote for just cause. And of course, in 6213 itself, there are, even if recollection serves, 7 criteria defined as to what you would look at in saying this person can be demoted for cause. And interestingly enough, I think Waukesha kind of concedes the point, because notice in May of 2000, they didn't give him a just cause hearing. They didn't try and take his level of supervisory skill and turn it into a disciplinary hearing and give him the due process hearing required. Because, frankly, Your Honor, and I hadn't really thought of this until you brought it up, if the performance was of such a level as to treat it as a reason to demote, and that's what we were really dealing with, then they would have given him the hearing. If they weren't seeing it the way I'm suggesting to you, it has to be seen and applied.
Let me just understand what you're saying. So if we would say this isn't a discipline case, is it?
It is not, correct.
Is there a difference between charges, you're not doing you're not competent. Is that the same as a discipline case?
It is not, for this reason. If you contemplate a just typical, simple, classic disciplinary case.
So you can distinguish between A, discipline, and B, charges.
If he was, quote, charged with
incompetence.
Right, charged with incompetence. One of the things he would be entitled to, the 6213 sub 5 scheme, is notice of those charges, Chapter 164 of the Officer's Bill of Rights. The first question I would have had they attempted to go that route, is show me the rule. They don't have such a rule. So it would have never come out as a charge. Couldn't and wouldn't.
Well, not being able to do the job, is that the same as incompetence?
I would assume it can be in the dictionary sense of the word, sure. But we do not demote for incompetence. We demote for misconduct.
Well, what about reduce in rank?
Reduced in rank. I'm using that as demotion.
Demotion.
And he was reduced in rank.
Okay. On what grounds?
The only real grounds, unless we want to play the game of their after Antisdale attempt to suggest maybe it's cause or whatever they were trying to do, the only grounds that were ever stated, and I'm quoting it, is the letter in 97 wherein the chief simply wrote, quote, has not successfully completed the probationary period. Those few words are the entirety of how Krause lost his rank. That's the whole record on it.
I think you just said that we don't demote for incompetence, we only demote for misconduct. Suppose chief promotes an officer, and that officer tries very hard, but doesn't have any leadership ability, or is not able to inspire people, that the performance there is inadequate. What does the chief do?
I think that question, Justice Prosser, really triggers the third prong of my argument. Is there a reason or a need for the court, this court, to in effect help out the employer on this end of the spectrum? And I think what addresses your quest is, number one, a promotion only occurs after you've worked with the person for some time. You have some knowledge of this person, some knowledge of their abilities. Second, if that is the concern, in my opinion, and I think I'm backed on that opinion by the rules of construction of statutes. It is a matter for the legislature. And interestingly enough, it's not a concern that Waukesha itself really had until trying to back themselves in this case, because if you look at their own rules, they say when they promote somebody, you've got to meet two criteria. And just like the statute doesn't use the word probation, their two criteria don't use the word probation. You got to pass a physical exam, and you have to pass a drug screen. So Waukesha gave their two tests. I think in terms of your question, that concern, what if this person doesn't work out, at a minimum, if they didn't think they could promote competently by having worked with somebody, in this case for 7 years, they should have added something to that list other than physical test and drug or physical exam and drug test. Much like the statute, Waukesha didn't.
Are you saying that the department and the Police and Fire Commission are simply stuck with someone who's been promoted in error?
As a matter of law, yes. As a matter of common sense, practicality, the real world, again, we have to remember that if they applied the criteria in 6213-4 in the first place, this person that got promoted shouldn't or can't be a total loser. That would seem to, and I'm not trying to duck the question by saying that, but also, as I said, they should fashion a remedy with the legislature, and they could do things to increase confidence. All of us can still learn.
But yeah. You're saying, I mean, forgetting a pull back to the legislature, you're saying, as a practical matter, in answer to Justice Prosser's question, that there isn't anything. I mean, that's what I heard you say.
And in fact, I am saying that. In effect, to take that question and address it, just grab it, there probably isn't a department, assuming it's got some size to it at all, that doesn't have people of equal ranks where you look at one person as certainly being far better than the other, and you look at the other person and you hope that they retire.
But counsel, if we're not talking about varying degrees of competence, which is your comment, some are better than others, but overt incompetence, it seems to me an untenable situation that if in a position of such public importance that you have someone who is incompetent, that there is no remedy. Certainly the citizens deserve to have someone in leadership who is at least minimally competent. No remedy.
I agree with you that the citizens are entitled to competence. They're entitled to competence in how many jobs that don't have a probationary period. We don't elect people, for example, to office with a probationary period. I thought real hard about whether I'd use that one or not.
No, but you can sure get
the court is sensitive on that issue. I'd stay away from it, counsel.
I have now answered the question of whether I should use that argument.
But it seems untenable to me. Can you address my concern?
I can address your concern in this sense. One of the things that I have yet to see defined or articulated by Waukesha is to try to submit to you that a gross level of incompetence cannot be given the level of a rule violation. In fact,
what rule is that? You said you need a rule. What rule is that?
In Waukesha, yeah. I don't know if they have one. They haven't submitted it in the record. That doesn't mean such rules don't exist. I'm not submitting that to the court. I'm saying that Waukesha hasn't done it. And if you look at a person who has functioned as a police officer long enough and well enough to get promoted, now we hypothesize a level of incompetence, such as Justice Bradley is saying we need to protect the public from. What I am in effect being told when I'm saying, are you really sticking the public with that person, is that the chief, with the assistance of his or her counsel, cannot come up with a rule violation for that level of incompetence. I don't think that's how it would play out in the real world.
But your statutory interpretation argument is premised on this idea that the legislature put in place a system for law enforcement, one of the most sensitive occupations that exists in government, a system that protects incompetence. Unless the department trumps up the charge to amount to some form of misconduct that would constitute a rules violation.
Exactly.
And is that a valid statutory interpretation argument to make?
It's a valid statutory interpretation argument to make because it's in no way unique. I did not invent the concept of tenure. I did not invent the concept of just cause. I didn't invent any of it. I didn't invent Chapter 111, which in effect gives you collective bargaining municipal entities where you have to go through step processes, whatever the collective bargaining agreement says. It is not really my opinion. It's what the statute says.
Well, let me try and get at it this way. One of the people on this bench is going to have to write an opinion. And here is your chance to help us out and dictate to us what that opinion is. So tell us the reasoning, outline the reasoning you would use that you think entitles your client to the relief he wants.
The argument I would make is that, in my own mind, Your Honor, I separate out a lawyer needs to be intelligent, a judge or a justice needs to possess wisdom. And I think wisdom is the ability to look at a statute, maintain us as a nation of laws, apply the law, and get creative, and I don't mean that term in a pejorative sense. There are many social reforms in this country that are due to Supreme Court level rulings.
So you're the judge. You fulfill all of those criteria, and tell us how you're going to reason this case out.
I'm going to reason this case out in these respects. Number one, I'm going to study the concern articulated by Justice Bradley.
You've studied it. Now tell us what your resolution is.
My resolution is that I don't think that concern is in the real world of such a level, and in the real world so incapable of redress through finding a rule violation that I have to violate the rules of home rule authority and statutory construction.
Give me your statutory interpretation that gets you to where you want to get.
My statutory...
Whatever your argument is, I want a good legal argument as to why, because I'm going to write it down, and then if I have to write it, I'm going to give it a lot of consideration.
Okay, my statutory interpretation is that statutes are one source of home rule authority. Home rule authority is what the statute says and what the statute fairly implies. If a statute says you have the authority to remove snow, it implies you have the authority to buy a snowplow. If the statute says you have the authority to promote, and it gives the two criteria that I've promoted, that I've articulated before, then you promote keeping the best interests of the public service in mind, and when you promote, you remove for cause like the statute says. And is there a danger that the public would be so jeopardized by a less than bright selection that this court should violate those rules of home rule authority and statutory construction? My answer to that is no.
Well, then your position, if I understand it, is if you've got an employee who is a tenured employee has a job, and that employee is promoted on the basis of those two criteria, then you cannot reduce that person in rank unless you charge him for violation of a rule or order. Is that your position?
That is precisely my position, coupled with the fact that that is my position because that's what the statutes say.
Counsel, your argument is if a statute says you have the authority or that you must remove snow, your argument is then implicit in that is you have the authority to buy a snow plow. How about the analogy of if the statute says that under sub 4 of 6213, you have the authority, chief, to appoint subordinates and to make promotions, that implicit in that is to set up some kind of a structure that reasonably addresses how you make promotions.
Because
give
you,
me your snow. Why is that different than the snow plow?
Because you can't imply, if there was a statute that said this is the only circumstances under which you can buy plows, like 165 saying this is the circumstance under one probation, then it isn't implied because it's contradicted elsewhere in the statute. Second, it's implied because it's inherently necessary. It is not inherently necessary to have the ability to remove. If it was, then let's imply an ability to obviate collective bargaining agreements under Chapter 111, and in effect, the implication is that if you can make a good enough argument to back it, everybody's an at-will employee. It's a limitless implication, and I know I'm giving it maybe an extreme twist, but it is an implication that goes without limit. Thus, it is not a fair implication.
Well, how could that, in this case where you have a person who was an employee, I don't think there's going to be any argument that he's entitled to a just cause based on his first position. This whole thing, I see, and I'm trying to fit your argument, that once you make the decision to advance a person, then that's a done deal, and that person can never be challenged without a just cause hearing. So once the person is hired, then he or she is in for a just cause hearing during the entire tenure of their employment. In other words, the time of their employment.
That's my position. If somebody spent their entire career as a police officer and never took a promotion, after 1 year, you got them for life unless you apply that statute.
So if we interpret the statute the way that you're suggesting, does that just make the distinctions that were drawn in Tisdale and the cases that it cited between discipline and non-discipline just irrelevant?
No, I don't. I think that the court, interestingly enough, followed a narrow rule, just as I'm asking it to do in making the Tisdale decision. You had a very limited record. You didn't need to reach this issue to decide the Tisdale case. Thus, the Tisdale case was very precisely tailored to the Tisdale facts. Now the issue has come to you. And hopefully this time I get it right and I'm not back here a third time.
But if there's no authority to promote on a probationary basis, then it doesn't matter whether a demotion is disciplinary or non-disciplinary. It's always going to get you a just cause hearing.
And it's always, I think, inherently going to be disciplinary. I'm using discipline to equate with something requiring a just cause hearing. And that's really trade slang, for lack of a better term. Just like I use the term demoted. You're going to apply, I'll phrase it this way, Your Honor. you're going to apply 6213-5. If you want to demote, you do it under 6213-5, period.
Because he has tenure.
Pardon me?
Because he has tenure, because no probationary period is authorized.
A statutory tenure, yes. Thank you.
Well, it seems to me, sir, that your argument is hard to dispute so long as there's no probationary period. After the probationary period, there's going to have to be cause to demote somebody or do something. But you're arguing that right from the moment of a promotion, it's tenure. You're locked in.
Thus the precise phrasing of the issue by the Court of Appeals. If there's authority to do it any other way, what is it? Thus their phrasing of the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fuchs. Is it Mites? Thank you, Attorney Kurt R. Mites, representing the City of Waukesha Police and Fire Commission.
Thank you, Justice Averson. Please, the court. I am Kurt Mites. I'm the City Attorney of Waukesha, and I represent the Police and Fire Commission. As an initial matter, I would just like to say that I would ask the court, matter that Mr. Fuchs made concerning the record, to look at the record to see what de facto stipulations were made prior to Ann Tisdale, and it'll show that this was a performance-based matter, and that the rule read into the record was the authority to adopt probation of Local Rule 25 of the Police Department. With that aside...
What precisely does that rule say? Is it in the record?
The rule says, Your Honor, and it's a police department record, that with regard to, in the case of a promotion to a sergeant, that it shall be as prescribed by the, probation shall be as prescribed by a labor contract or as prescribed by the chief. In Waukesha, a sergeant is no longer part of a collective bargaining unit, so it would be as prescribed by the chief.
Is that rule in the record?
That rule is stated by counsel for Mr. Krause was in the record. It was read into the record, yes.
Verbatim or just referred to generically?
It was read into the record with regard to the authority that what I just said, that it's either part of a collective bargaining agreement or as prescribed by the police chief.
So it isn't clear to me. Was it read into the record verbatim so that I can go to the record and say, oh, these are the exact provisions of that?
With regard, I believe if you look at the record, Attorney DeStefanis, who represented Mr. Krause, read that portion of it that said probation is as, citing Rule 25, per a collective bargaining agreement or as prescribed by the chief. With that aside, Mr. Fuchs would like this court to believe that this is a 6213-5 matter. It is not. Both issues for certification here involve the authority and application of 6213-4. And I would first like to address the issue of authority of the probation. To impose probation, there is ample authority in 6213-4-4A and 4C, which would allow chiefs and the combination with the Police and Fire Commission to impose probation. In addition, with regard to law enforcement officials, that authority is supplemented by Section 165.85.4E of the Wisconsin statutes, the Law Enforcement Board statute. And that provision provides that a law enforcement
enforcement agency is not precluded from setting higher recruit training and employment standards than set by the board. Contrary to what is stated by the petitioners, this statute does not just apply to new hirees. It's stated, it's clear there are provisions throughout 165-85 that speak in terms of establishing curriculum not only for new hirees but those already in service. You have 165-4BN, which talks about recertification standards and training for officers already in service. Plus, the important aspect, if you look at sub 1 sets forth the strong public policy of the state regarding law enforcement that is of vital importance, and that the adoption of training, education, and standards furthers the public interest and should be made available to all law enforcement officers, not just new hirees. The argument made by the petitioner simply is not in line with the proper rules of statutory construction. Both 6213 and 165-85 are matters of statewide concern.
If you didn't have 165.85 and just had to rely on 6213, what would your argument be?
This would be the argument is the authority is under to appoint in the appointment process to appoint with advantage and to adopt. The statute says it anticipates, it expects under 4C that a police and fire commission is going to adopt standards, is going to adopt rules calculated to secure the best service available. So if it was just dealing with just firefighters and police without the addition of 165, that would be the authority. And our
we have a rule about people, let me just ask it this way then. The chief wrote that there's a reduction in rank because he has not successfully completed his probationary period. What does that mean? And is that a charge that he just didn't act competently?
One, it was found by the police and fire commission. This was for performance-based reasons. It was not based on anything disciplined. There is nothing in the record to indicate this was had to do with misconduct, any allegations of a rule violation. If there was any doubt about that, they certainly could have brought evidence to the Police and Fire Commission to establish their jurisdiction, saying, this is discipline. That was never done. And if you look at the record, counsel agrees that, and Tisdale didn't answer this question. And we believe if this had any hint of discipline.
By discipline, you mean some kind of misconduct.
Absolutely.
No misconduct other than he just couldn't hack it.
That's our position. That is our belief that authority under 6213-4 to establish probation involves whether this period of time, during that period of time when they are promoted from the rank of a patrol officer, now doing the supervisory capacity, entirely different job functions, where now you are being asked to coordinate criminal investigations, traffic investigations, make quick decisions, be in charge of a management team, that you're being adverted. You can be on the force for 20 years, I submit, not only 7 years as Mr. Krause. They have not observed that person in their capacity of a supervisor. And what better way to make that observation is through a period of time in which the chief and the captains can observe this person in a new role. They just won't have the opportunity to do that. And I think based on that strong public policy for law enforcement, it's incumbent that it demands that resources such as probation be made available, especially in such a position as law enforcement. As pointed out, I believe, by Justice Sykes, this is such an important matter. The legislature recognizes it. They deal in matters of life and death situations every day. They have a lot of power that's given the police officers, the ability to carry a weapon, make arrests, traffic control.
You know, that makes all the sense in the world to me. But let's see if the legislature did what makes all the
right.
sense
and
in the world.
Justice Bradley, that's what Laura is getting at. The test is, if it's not specifically set forth in the statute, you can't do it. That's not the law with matters involving statewide concern. The test is, one, has that authority been expressly withdrawn by the legislature? Nowhere in 6213 or 16585 did it say that you cannot impose probation.
Well, one way that we approach statutory construction is, okay, is it expressly set forth in the statutes, in 6213.5. Now, it's not going to be expressly set forth there. And you indicate that you can get it, the authority in 1613, rather, for A and C.
That's correct. To impose probation, yes.
To impose probation. Yet the words, the word probation doesn't appear in 16.13
for
A or C, does it?
62. No, it does not, but I mean...
So the argument of your opposing counsel is, well, look, it's not there. Now, the legislature knew how to spell probation because they did it in 16585.4b several times when they said that new recruits, you know, requires probationary status, and they set that out. The argument is, if they know how to spell it, we can assume that they intentionally didn't use it in 16.13 for A and C. They used it here for new hirees, but they're not using it in 16.13 for A and C. Now, you seem to suggest that you can get it out of 16585.4e, at least I heard.
That supplements DOT's authority to adopt additional training, recruit training and employment standards in addition to that set by the board.
And what am I missing? And hopefully you can tell me, because I might be missing it.
4e.
I interpreted it to be for recruit standing, recruit training. This section does not include any law enforcement or tribal law enforcement agency or sheriff from setting recruit training and employment standards which are higher than the minimal standards set by the board. I interpret 4E, upon which you are relying for this sergeant, to only apply to setting recruit training and employment standards.
With all due respect, Justice Bradley, I think you have to look at the statute as a whole. The statute is not limited, and that was argued by Attorney Fuchs. There are numerous provisions that talk about setting a criteria for training for people already in service. I think 3D is an example. You have an employment standard under
4B and which requires a recertification.
It may, and I don't have all of these things memorized, let alone even being able to read them. My as you're going through them, my comment is just this, that you said that 16.13 for A and C is the statutory authority, together with 165.85
4E. 4E and which evinces the public policy which is set forth in Section 1.
As I read 4E, upon which you rely, and in response you went into other things like C and D or something, but as I read 4E, upon which you rely, that only pertains to new recruits. If I am incorrect, show me the language in 4E upon which you rely to indicate that this applies to a sergeant.
The statute, 165.85 in sub 1, applies and sets forth the policy applies to all law enforcement officers, not just new hirees.
But
and as I also,
is there any language in sub E that you can refer to me to? And that's okay if there isn't. I just want to know. Your response is, I think, no, there's nothing, although I rely on sub E, there's nothing in sub E that expressly says to anyone other than non-recruits. But the way I get that is back sub 1. Is that what you're
saying? It goes back to sub 1, which says it's not that narrowly limited. The entire statute is not limited to new recruits because there are a number of provisions, as I cited, that deal with those already in service.
Also, can I just cite the last part of the sentence, 165.85.1, and it refers to, and I was just, public interest requires that these standards be established and that this training and education be available to persons who seek to become law enforcement, tribal law enforcement, jail or secure detention officers, comma, persons who are serving as these officers in a temporary or probationary capacity, and persons already in regular service. So it would seem to cover, but I think her specific question is as far as 4E. But you're saying, well, you have to combine that with what I just read, persons already in regular service.
Exactly. Plus there are numerous subsections, I believe 3D and 4BN, which relate not to new hirees, but to standards for those already in service. The authority under 62.13.4 is also, the court has to look at what you decided 20 years ago. It's often used in the briefs that when looking at probation, you said that it is an excellent method or an excellent means of examining a candidate and is well suited to secure the best service available. It's very important. When the court said that, it was not analyzing 165.85.4E. It was analyzing 62.13.4C and D. That is, to secure the best service available, it was an excellent means, probation, of securing the best service available. And I submit to you that there is no basis to find that it is not any less of an excellent means for examining promotees than it is for new hirees. Just as the court said, it is a part of the hiring process. Also here is it is part of the promotion process. It just makes sense. It is a logical extension of what you decided. It simply makes sense, and it flows from your argument. You did not distinguish that this, granted it was a new hiree case,
But probation in and of itself, as defined by Webster's, a test, a trial or test to examine one's character or qualifications. This is a perfect idea, and it flows from the statute of being able to establish rules calculated to secure the best service available.
If a person who's been promoted and is on probation, as Mr. Krause was, and the chief within the time period of probation writes you are being reduced in rank and going back to your former job because you have not successfully completed your probationary period, does the employee have any way of getting review of the chief's decision?
If it is not discipline,
it's exactly this.
If it's not misconduct. He goes back to his prior position as
no review.
Not as a probationary officer. He has no property right in the interest of sergeant until he is approved by the police and fire commission.
All that any probationer has to be told is you have not successfully completed your probationary period. No review.
There is no review before the police and fire commission because it does not, 62.13.4 does not provide for such a hearing. And I don't think the court read into anything more than that. That is within the discretion of the police chief and in combination with the police and fire commission.
No review.
Not if he's probation. No, there is no. It is no review. If he's tenured, certainly we can see the Roth hearing would be appropriate if it's for non-disciplinary reasons. One last thing, if I may, I know that time is running short. With regard to the due process or the just cause matter, what Mr. Fuchs is asking you to do by employing 62.13.5 as a basis for a hearing, even for any kind of matter, not just discipline. Effectively, it's against the plain language of the statute, which this court has recognized in Kaiser. It said convincingly that this applies only to discipline. You said it in Claire. You said it in Larson versus Toma that was before you, and you most recently said it in Ann Tisdale that this applies to discipline.
No, we didn't. We reserved it in that case. Let me tell you how I could read this to apply. Mr. Krause is a subordinate, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so he falls under no subordinate. May be reduced in rank. This is a reduction in rank under. Based on charges filed by the chief. Now the question is if you say he has not successfully completed his probationary period, is that a charge? If it is a charge, then you get a just cause hearing. If it's not a charge, you don't. That's just following the language of EF. It then goes to say, in making the determination, the board shall apply the following standards to the extent applicable.
That's correct.
And then the standards do relate to rules and orders for the most part, to the extent they're applicable. So if there's any rule or order within the department that you have to do a good job, you have to be competent?
Not that I'm aware of, that there is a rule. I mean, I think you have to look at this. Did he pass a test? It's a part of the evaluation process. He didn't make it. He could be doing the best job possible. He just doesn't have the ability to be a good leader. Maybe he should go back and get a better chance to his former position, study some more, do more training, give him another chance. But the four corners of 62.13.5 does not, it only applies
to a discipline which clearly connotates, and I'll take it from Black's Law Dictionary, a penalty after a finding of misconduct.
Let me ask quickly, as a practical matter, a person that goes back to the patrolman or goes back to a sergeant, say going up to a lieutenant, would always have the opportunity, it's not to advance him or herself at a later time, right?
They could always have that opportunity to do that, and it's encouraged, and I think you have to look on this process under 6213-4 as a positive process, not something that you find for misconduct under FUM 5 penalizing, or how serious was the violation. I mean, like I say, you could try your hardest, and you just don't have the capabilities. I mean, how often have we heard that he's a great football player, but he just does not have the appropriate leadership abilities? Or the other way around, he's got the total package. He's a good player, and he can lead. Therefore, the reason why this period of probation is so important, and why the statutes, it's not only inferred, it anticipates that you are going to adopt rules, and the standard is not that it's expressly provided. If it doesn't conflict, doesn't logically defeat, and it does not violate the spirit, clearly probation bolsters the public policy both in 165.85 and 6213.4. Thank you.
Sir, I want to follow up the question I think the Chief was asking. So long as there is a charge, a hint of misconduct or a rule violation or something like that, there's a due process hearing. All you have to do is to put a different label on it, or at least this is the concern that I have. All you have to do is to put a different label on it. This is just performance, and there's no hearing. How do we react to that dilemma?
That's possible. Number one, I would have the answer to this. I think there is a presumption that boards, commissions, and certainly public officials act with regularity and validity, and they're going to discharge their duties in accordance with the law and act impartially and in good faith. If there is any doubt that the officer believes he or she was disciplined, there is nothing to prevent them from either bringing forth their records in their personnel file 10313, saying this was the real reason why I was demoted, or for that matter, bringing forth evidence to the Police and Fire Commission. You should have jurisdiction here because this is what really happened. It wasn't performance-based. It was really because I was disobeying an order, and they're just trying to disguise this as something else. Or the other alternative, go right to the court through a mandamus action.
Well, suppose it's the chief isn't so concerned about performance, he just doesn't like the guy.
If he doesn't like the guy, I would answer it this way. That would be within his prerogative, and the reason is part of the problem, whether he's going to fit on the management team, can he get along with the person? Can they or cannot? I think it's within his discretion. If for some reason they can't get along during that promotion process, during that probationary period, there's something where he's not going to fit on that team. It might be he doesn't listen well to the chief, or there's just a conflict. I think that's within his discretion to make that decision during the probationary period, that there's a problem here, because that discretion is vested with him, and it should be vested with him. He knows who he wants on his management team. He has the expertise, and if there's a problem with somebody who has gone up on a probationary period, I think he has the right to say he's not fit for the service. Nothing to do with discipline. Maybe we have a problem with our personalities, but I think it's within his discretion.
How about if the problem with my personality
is I'm a sergeant who's backing a sheriff for election that the chief is not favoring. And so the chief says, hey, you're not part of my team. We don't think alike. Is that the, where do you channel that kind of thing?
That gets into a little bit of a different, you know, again, there are many gray areas, but what is the recourse? I don't think, I mean, sub 5 is clear what it applies to, discipline. Are you really disciplining him because you have a personality, a character? I don't believe so. The problem is, and I think it might be ruthless, you might say, but until during that period of time, that probationary period, that is the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court has said in Roth and Bishop Wood, they don't have any more than the unilateral expectation. They do not have any security interest in an acquired benefit until such time as they that name is submitted for approval of the police or fire commission. There may be some gray areas, but there is going to have to be able to show something else, that there might be discrimination, which the availability could be through ERD or filing a federal lawsuit. There are other remedies available depending on the facts. And I think that's how I would answer it. It would depend on the particular circumstances. But for the most part, if it's performance, if they don't get along, that's within the discretion of the police chief during that probationary period. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Corum, Attorney Corum, representing the amicus curiae, Wisconsin Chiefs of Police Association.
Thank you. May it please the court. Police chiefs in this state every day are called upon to promote people to accomplish the best service available, and the only way they can do that is to use testing processes. I'm not a Latin scholar, but I can tell you that the word probation comes from a Latin root meaning to test. And as Mr. Mites cited, the dictionary definition indicates that a probationary period is a test. And if we look to the language of 6213 sub 4 in A, C, and D, the legislature repeatedly grants to the Police and Fire Commission broad authority in various items of the language there to provide for rules for the appointment process. The examination process is subject to the approval of the board. The board shall control such examinations. They can have special examination procedures for each class or each rank within the service. And for that reason, the power and authority to determine the best qualified applicants is part of a testing process, which we believe naturally subsumes the notion of probation. One of the concerns that I've had sitting listening to the argument so far is the notion that there is a level of competence versus incompetence, and that ought to be the only inquiry here. In fact, we're trying to secure the best service. Someone who may well be given that trial period, that test, that year-long on-the-job test that the probationary period is. And at the end of that testing process, they may be minimally competent, but the purpose of the statute is to ensure that the representatives of the public, the Police and Fire Commission as an independent body under Stanfield, has control over setting levels of competence, and it can set higher or lower levels depending on who's available, what their needs of the department are at that particular time. And the commissions, by the statute, have been empowered with the ability and the authority to make those distinctions and to control that process. Rule 25, by the way, is in the record. You'll find it in the appellate's appendix, page 132, and it specifically is the action by the Police and Fire Commission of the City of Waukesha pursuant to 6213 sub C, setting rules for determining the best qualified service in the department to give to the chief the ability to run an employee through this test, this probationary period, to determine whether or not he meets the expectations and has the level of quality that the chief expects. And if the chief finds him appropriate to meet that level of standards, then the Police and Fire Commission then approves, finally, at the conclusion of the probationary period, the permanent appointment to the rank of sergeant. We find no statutory language that prohibits the Waukesha Police and Fire Commission from doing so. We think it can be fairly interpreted and extended from the language of the statute itself, and for that reason, we believe the actions of the Police and Fire Commission and the Waukesha Chief were appropriate.
Now on page 132, where it discusses the rule.
Yes, ma'am.
It says that the rule is, at least in part, probationary periods, except for each of the positions, and that's covered. The position here is covered. Except for temporary assignments, will be in accordance with those prescribed by the chief of police.
Correct.
It goes on to say that there's nothing in there that prescribes such probationary period. And it goes on to say, excuse me, each promotion shall be contingent on passing a physical exam and a drug screen. Is that correct?
That's the correct reading of page 132. That's correct.
Well, yes, but is the reading of the rule correct here? Because we don't have the rule. We have somebody describing the rule. Is that a correct?
I believe the text of the rule is there. You'll also find it quoted correctly in appellant's brief on page, I'm guessing, in the statement of facts of appellant's brief. He, in an indented paragraph, specifically quotes Rule 25 and its language.
Right.
Page 20 of appellant's brief has the rule specifically quoted.
It's what I read.
Right.
It doesn't say anything about probation.
It indicates that the probationary period shall be as determined by the chief.
That's it.
Right.
Nothing else.
It delegates to the chief that authority and that power. And it reflects the dual role of both the chief and the commission under a sub-4 appointment process. And it indicates that, like this court ruled in Kaiser, that probation is an extension of the appointment process. In Kaiser, you called it hiring, but really sub-4 is an appointment process. There's no distinction between hiring and promotion in 4. They're all simply appointments. We think it's also important on behalf of the Chiefs Association that we have a more settled area of the law rather than a less settled area of the law. And Tisdale caused some concern, and in this case we are trying to ensure that there is a consistent application of the law. Mr. Fuchs asked that any negative job action, according to his brief, automatically and always go to a sub-5 hearing. We think such a ruling would undermine and perhaps effectively overturn Kaiser, Hussey, Eastman, the Schultz versus Baumgart case, where for no reason of his own, the firefighter could not perform the duties of his job for physical reasons. He was entitled to a due process hearing, but not to a sub-5 hearing pursuant to Schultz versus Baumgart. And frankly, would render 6213-5M, which talks about reductions in rank because of a layoff, a nullity. Because if all negative job actions go through sub-5, we don't need 5M anymore. So in order to have a consistent rule of law here, we think it's important that and Tisdale be limited to its narrow facts, where both parties acknowledge and understand that the adverse employment action was taken because of a disciplinary action. In Tisdale, the department acknowledged that they were disciplining him for an event which occurred prior to his probationary period even beginning, and that that was the only reason that they had to make the decision that they did. We think that's a narrow exception to what we hope will be the general rule of Krauss, that you can have probationary periods as you did in Kaiser. Thank you.
Counsel, you asked for consistency in law. How does your interpretation apply to jurisdictions of the population under 4,000?
Jurisdictions under 4,000 specifically talk about probationary periods if you do not have a police and fire commission in place. You can have a specifically authorized probationary period, but I don't think that that authorizes probation. I think that's simply a reflection, as Chapter 165 is a reflection that probationary periods exist and are common. As Mr. Fuchs indicated, just because they're common, that doesn't make it right. But the fact that they are common, and the fact that the Wisconsin legislature in 1993, when they passed Act 53, put the seven tests of just cause into 6213 sub 5, had an opportunity to rewrite the law to specifically overturn Kaiser and overturn that broad common practice of probation and chose not to, we think is an important factor.
I have a clarification question about this up and out argument. It's my understanding that that is gone from the case because no one is arguing that the chief or the department or the Fire and Police Commission has the authority to reimpose a period of probation at the old rank.
That's correct. It is my understanding that subsequent to the decision in this case, the issue of whether or not Mr. Krauss could or could not have been put on some sort of new probationary period in his police officer rank was resolved between the parties. It is not an issue before this court today.
And you're not arguing that on behalf of your client, the Chiefs Association, is that authority.
That's correct. We believe that the officer who tries the trial period that probation is, who tries that test, doesn't lose anything he already had. He had just cause. He had a property right. He had strong rights in his rank as a patrol officer. And he shouldn't be penalized by trying to better himself. And if the chief decides he is lacking, not incompetent, but not the best available candidate, the chief should be able to put him back into his old rank without restriction, except for, obviously, some of the issues raised before. If the chief acts because he violates the First Amendment rights of the employee has other rights. Not a five hearing, but other rights. If he believes it's because of race or age or sex, he can file a discrimination complaint. If he believes the real reason is discipline, a la in Tisdale, he can get a mandamus action. That's what in Tisdale is. There are lots of remedies for people who believe their rights have been violated by the chief's judgment about his qualifications. It's just not a sub-5 hearing.
And if the chief just doesn't like his promotee or her promotee, what then?
It's unclear why the chief would have promoted a probationary period in the first instance if he doesn't like him. But we presume that our police chiefs act in good faith to the benefit of the citizenry. They work hand in glove with the Police and Fire Commission as representatives of the local communities. And chiefs who do that would not be fulfilling their obligations to represent the best interests of the community. But I would say that that officer is in no different position than any other employee at will in the state of Wisconsin. If they can point to a statutory protection, if they can point to some other legal protection, that's fine. Then they can enforce those laws. But if they can't point to a law, we fall back to the presumption of appropriate behavior by our officials, including the chiefs of police of this state. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Hughes.
Thank you. I would ask you to consider just a couple of things. Number one, that home rule authority never be applied. Andre, trust us, we won't be abusive type theory. I respectfully submit to you, I don't have that level of trust. Justice Wilcox pointed out that Chapter 165 does talk about training for those in service, and it does, but I think there are two things that are significant, because I did consider that, Justice Wilcox. Number one, I do not accept demotion as training. I accept it as counterproductive, not training. Number two, I would ask that you consider the need to reconcile statutes, interpret them in harmony, and I think Justice Prosser illustrated what would happen if we decide to expand 165 beyond its real meaning. Make that probationary period 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. As long as we're coming up with a probation that's not in the statutes in the first place, there's obviously no statutory authority for how long that probation would be. Now that person's tenure isn't going to come into existence 2, 3, 4, 5 years. More important than that, their position opens a door to absolutely obviating and trampling 62.13.5. We have to ask ourselves, why would we demote for cause when you can demote for discretionary judgment of one's performance? My most significant point to you, I think, is this. The alarmist arguments, and I will describe them that way, about how the public needs this, are not supported in the record. There should have been a record of how many people have really had to be demoted because they can't hack it. And more significantly than that, if we really need to have every cop at a higher rank go through a probationary period to see if they're going to hack it or cut it, pardon my slang, then what I think they're missing, particularly the Chiefs Association, is the single most important cop to apply probation to is the chief. So it's a really self-defeating and counterproductive argument. And while I appreciate that it has a facetious overtone to it, somehow or other we do seem to be getting by. The last thing I would say is the idea that if you were to give these chiefs this trust me type power, anybody says that it's a simple matter of running down to court, treated as a First Amendment case, you violated my civil rights, needs to read decisions out of the Seventh Circuit like Corney Augustuson, and needs to consider whether or not police officers can substitute hundreds of thousands of dollars for that kind of litigation for the rights that the legislature already gave them. Thank you.
Could I ask, this may not be in the record, but Sergeant Krause was promoted to fill a vacancy created by the promotion of another sergeant. Did that sergeant have a probationary period when he was promoted?
I really cannot say. I can say, I just don't recall that, Your Honor.
A more general question is, had Waukesha consistently used probation?
While I can't answer the question factually, I understand the import of the question, and that being you can contribute to some arbitrariness. Number one, where is the consistency? Where are the standards for this judgment of performance? Your question triggers that concern in my mind. And number two, the chaos of who gets to bump whom if you have this broadened ability to take away rank. I think that all lends itself towards interpreting the statute for what it says or what they say. I just don't recall the circumstances of that other officer.
Thank you, Mr. Fuchs. Thank you, Mr. Mainz.
thank you, Mr. Corum, for your argument today. This concludes a hearing in 01-1106, Krause versus City of Waukesha Policy and Fire Commission. We'll take a few moments of recess. Do we have students coming in?